Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Okay, let's talk about something most parents know all too well, child defiance. That moment when you ask your child to do something and you get, well, resistance.
Yeah, anything from a flat-out no to maybe just ignoring you, where it can be incredibly frustrating.
Absolutely, and that frustration often leads to, you know, shouting matches, slammed doors. It just escalates.
It really does. So today we're diving into source material from Dr. Scott Taransky, looking at his lesson, What to Do When Kids Say No. It's all about a heart-based approach.
A heart-based approach. I like the sound of that. What's the mission here? What are we trying to achieve for parents listening?
Well, the core idea is to get parents out of that reactive mode. You know, when you feel that anger or anxiety bubbling up, that often just makes things worse. The goal here is to find a strategic plan, something that addresses defiance from the child's heart to really maximize the chance for, you know, lasting change, not just temporary compliance.
Okay, strategy, not just reaction. I get it. So where do we start? The source material talks about systemic reasons, right? Like, why do kids become defiant in the first place?
Right. It's not just random stubbornness. The source points to a few key things. First, kids can get, well, too comfortable. Pleasure becomes the goal. Comfort is the ideal state.
So anything that interrupts that comfort zone.
Exactly. Like being asked to clean their room or turn off a video game, it's an unwelcome disruption, so they resist.
Makes sense. What else?
Control. Kids naturally like having control, and they really don't like being told what to do. It's pretty fundamental.
Uh-huh.
And then there's temperament. Some kids are just naturally more strong-willed, maybe born leaders.
Okay, comfort, control, and temperament. So how does the source tie this into the heart?
This is where the core heart idea comes in. It's really insightful. Defiance reveals a heart that wants to lead but hasn't learned how to follow.
Wants to lead but hasn't learned to follow. That reframes it completely, doesn't it? It's not just bad behavior.
Precisely. It's seeing the potential, the leadership drive, but recognizing it's untrained. And this leads to why the source emphasizes obedience so much. Not in the harsh way, but as a learning process.
How so? It mentions some secret ingredients.
Yeah, that's the term used. The idea is that learning obedience, like immediate obedience when appropriate, teaches kids four critical things they need for life. Things you kind of can't learn easily elsewhere.
Okay, what are the four?
One, learning to give up your own agenda sometimes. Two, developing a sense of obligation, that feeling you should do something even if you don't want to.
Right.
Three, responsiveness to authority, learning how to actually listen and respond when someone in charge gives direction. And four, submission.
Okay, submission. That word can be tricky for people. How does the source define it here?
It's important to understand it's not about crushing the child. It's presented as a valuable gift, actually. It's about learning to yield willingly, to cooperate effectively. Think about it. That skill is vital in marriage, on a work team.
Anywhere you need to collaborate, really. Yeah.
Exactly. So if defiance is the opposite of learning these skills, then teaching obedience is basically character development, refining that raw leadership potential.
Which brings us right to the strong-willed child, the SWC. Parents often see the good stuff, the determination, the courage, and maybe excuse the defiance because of it.
Absolutely. And we should see those strengths. These kids are often internally driven, determined, brave, natural leaders, resilient, amazing qualities.
There was a but.
There's a but. The source talks about crossing the line. Those exact same strengths, if they're not guided, can become major weaknesses.
How does that flip happen?
Well, determination becomes stubborn resistance. Courage turns into arguing about everything, that leader orientation. It becomes challenging rules just for the sake of it. Being slow to yield, always needing to win. Correction just feels like a fight.
Yeah, the power struggle.
That's it. There's a story in the material about a dad whose son was described as a terrorist at home. Always arguing, demanding.
What?
And the advice wasn't just make him comply. It was to acknowledge the leadership potential. The dad started framing things differently.
Oh.
He'd say something like, look, I know you're a leader. I want to help you be a great one. So today's leadership training exercise is cooperation. That means giving up your agenda right now and doing what I asked.
That's a brilliant reframe. It taps into the strength instead of fighting it.
Right, because the source points out an untrained leader uses their power selfishly to avoid work, dominate others. They can become manipulative, bossy, even bullies, little tyrants.
So the goal isn't to break the will, but to smooth the rough edges.
Exactly, to channel that power constructively, teach them responsiveness so they can actually lead effectively later on, not just push people around. Because if they can't learn to follow or cooperate, that leadership potential just fizzles out.
Okay, this groundwork is super helpful. Let's get practical. Strategy one. If a parent is stuck in those power struggles right now, what's the very first thing they need to change?
It starts with the parent's own mindset. Strategy one is, don't make the issue about you. This is huge. Meaning, when your child defies you, it hits your buttons. Frustration, anger, maybe fear that you're failing as a parent. You have to recognize that surge of emotion and consciously step back. Keep the child's problem to solve.
So detach your own ego or feelings from their behavior. Focus on the strategy, not the immediate win.
Precisely. It's about moving the child forward, like long-term character growth, not just winning the current battle. This stops you from becoming the opponent.
Got it. Okay. Strategy two builds on that.
It does. Stop the process earlier. Don't wait for the huge meltdown. Catch defiance when it's small, whether the kid is 3 or 15.
And establish clear rules beforehand, like you don't say no to mom or dad.
Yes. Setting a clear standard is key. And teaching them how to appeal properly if they have a genuine issue, not just defaulting to no. But here's the really important part.
What's that?
Defiance isn't just the word no. The source says kids have like 100 ways of saying, I don't want to follow.
100 ways. Okay, like what? What are these subtle forms parents might be missing?
Oh, things like constant arguing, sarcasm, complaining, ignoring you, the silent treatment. That's not fair. Grumbling, whining, being overly dramatic.
What about just a bad attitude? Like they do the chore, but they stomp around and sigh heavily.
Yep, that counts too. Even eye rolling or that disrespectful tone. Because the heart is still saying no, even if the body eventually complies.
Okay, so why is it so critical to address the grumbling if, you know, the dishes eventually get done?
Because compliance without a change of heart is just temporary. The defiance is still simmering. The source says you need to address these things, set the standard, during non-discipline times.
Oh, when things are calm.
Exactly. Talk about eye-rolling or disrespectful tone when everyone's relaxed. Then when it happens in the heat of the moment, the expectation is already clear. You're not introducing a new rule mid-conflict.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Lay the groundwork when emotions are low. Okay, but what happens when conflict does arrive and the child starts to escalate things? That's strategy three, right?
Right. Strategy three, do not allow escalation. This is where parents often get drawn into the fight. The child says no, the parent feels challenged, and boom, shouting match. Yes, you will. No, I won't.
And nobody wins there. The relationship takes a hit.
Totally. So the key is stay calm. But stay firm. Calm doesn't mean caving. You still expect the instruction to be followed, but you refuse to get into that emotional yelling contest.
What if the no seems more like a meltdown, like pure emotion?
You acknowledge the feeling, but hold the line. I know you're upset about this, but when I give you an instruction, you need to do it right away. Comfort the emotion, perhaps, but don't drop the expectation.
And if the parent feels themselves starting to lose it?
That's where de-escalation tools come in. The source highlights the power of simply walking away. If the child is really digging in or melting down, arguing is pointless.
Just remove yourself from the immediate conflict.
Yeah. It lets your own emotions cool down so you can think strategically again. And often, interestingly, when the parent withdraws that energy, the child's heart softens. And they might just comply a few minutes later on their own.
But what if they don't? What if the defiance continues? Is that when we use the brake? Strategy four.
Exactly. If things aren't de-escalating, you use the brake. It's a clear, firm instruction. You're off track right now. You need to settle down, change your heart, and come back and see me when you're ready.
And they go to a specific spot, like a step or a chair.
Yeah, a designated spot. But, and this is crucial, it's not punishment like a traditional timeout.
How is it different?
The purpose isn't to punish the bad choice. It's a tool to help the child regain control. It's teaching an adult skill, really knowing when you need to step away and cool down before reacting. While they're on the break, all privileges stop. No room, no phone, no friends, nothing.
Okay, and here's the really different part I read about.
Mm-hmm.
The parent doesn't set a timer.
No timer, none. 5 minutes, 10 minutes, forget it. The responsibility shifts entirely to the child. They decide when they've settled their heart and are ready to cooperate, they have to initiate coming back.
So it could be 2 minutes or 2 hours?
Could be. The child owns the timeline. This is how they learn actual self-control. Moving from external consequences to internal regulation. If they try to come back too soon, still upset or defiant, you just calmly send them back to finish the break.
Wow, that's a major shift in responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay, that leads us to strategy five, which is about consequences, but used differently.
Right. The approach shifts away from what the source calls a justice mentality. You know, you did bad, so you get punished.
So it's not an eye for an eye?
Not at all. Instead, consequences are used to motivate right choices. The goal is building responsibility, not making the child suffer.
Okay, give me an example. How does that sound in practice? Let's say a child lost tablet privileges for being defiant.
Instead of saying, "Tablet's gone for 3 days because you were defiant," end of story, you'd say something like, "I took the tablet because you chose defiance, but I really want you to have it back. I'm on your side here. Show me today that you can be cooperative and respectful, and we'll talk about you earning that tablet back tomorrow."
So you offer hope, frame yourself as an ally, and put the responsibility on them to demonstrate the change.
Exactly. They earn it back through cooperation. It builds that internal motivation.
That makes sense. And the second part of this strategy is about practice.
Yes, training builds character. You need to actively give kids chances to practice responding rightly with cooperation, not defiance. Their heart needs that practice, that sort of muscle memory.
And when they do practice, even if it's not perfect, we affirm it. You mentioned affirming approximately right behavior.
That's so important, especially with older kids who might be more set in their ways. Let's say your teen is told to do the dishes. They stomp in, slam their hands down, mutter, "Fine." But then they actually do the dishes.
Right, compliance, but with major attitude.
You affirm the compliance first. "Thanks for doing the dishes right away." That showed cooperation. You acknowledge the positive step, they move the boulder. The bad attitude, which is still a form of defiance, you address later. Maybe the next day when things are calm. Don't try to fix everything in one go.
Prioritize the obedience, address the attitude separately. Got it. It feels like the ultimate aim here is really deep.
It is. It's about fundamentally changing the child's view of the parent from an opponent to an ally. Someone who's helping them shift from that default defiance mode to a way of living that will actually work well for them in life. Sometimes that even means, you know, increasing chores or hard work to help them overcome that deep-seated need for constant comfort.
It all circles back to that core idea, doesn't it?
It really does. Defiance shows a heart that wants to lead but hasn't learned to follow. This whole approach is about giving them the skills, the heart training, to balance those powerful impulses constructively.
So it's a strategic, heart-focused approach. Moving beyond reaction, understanding the why, catching defiance early, de-escalating, using the break to teach self-control, and using consequences to motivate.
That sums it up nicely. It's a shift in perspective for the parent, leading to a shift in the child's heart.
Powerful stuff. Okay, final thought for our listeners to chew on, building on this.
Yeah, let's leave you with this. The source suggests an untrained leader uses power mainly to avoid responsibility and dominate others. Think about applying the break concept to your own life. When you feel tension rising, maybe in a tough meeting, a difficult conversation, dealing with your own frustrations, what if you mentally sent yourself to take a break, settle down, and change your heart before reacting? What immediate challenge, maybe even a leadership one, could that help you navigate better in the next 24 hours?